This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 12th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I learned something new this week.
Wow, there's something out there that Chris Cosenza doesn't know.
That's true. It's absolutely true. You know,
shattering my world. Next thing you're going to say that Santa Claus really does exist.
He does, man. I met him at the mall.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we had a glass of milk together at the mall, and he explained to me that the seat to the right of the hijack seat is called the low jack.
Excellent. I like it.
That's the seat when you call the cops and they locate a plan of attack for you in the poker hand. Because I have never, you know, we've talked about this before, all these weird hands, weird names for all these seats. And, you know, we have Deep Stacks on board now. They write columns for us for our magazine. And Jay Houston is one of their sit-and-go phenoms. And I actually play Scrabble against this guy. He's a genius. And we have a lot of fun. But he wrote a column for us, and he said that the low jack seat is to the right of the hijack seat.
Wait a minute. We already called that seat the assassination seat, didn't we?
We did. So that's why I'm asking you, do you have to call foul on this or what?
Or the low jack. I like it. You know, it depends on what poker room you're in, whether actually the seat is actually low enough to call it the low jack seat.
Low jack.
So does that mean that in that seat you're required to put in a raise with jack tray or jack four?
Low jack. Oh, man, that's hilarious.
Well, so tell me more about why he calls it the low jack then.
You know, he doesn't explains a hand during a sit-and-go, a turbo sit-and-go tournament, and he just calls it that. And he never actually explained why. So I thought we would, you know, speculate on the show, and apparently having jack deuce or jack three is the reason for calling it. I don't know. But
excellent. Yeah, that's what I would say. But, you know, I believe Jay is actually sailing with us on the India Poker Cruise coming
yes,
up.
Yes, soon, he is. So. He's going to be there with TJ.
So maybe we can ask him then. And then here's what we'll do, Chris. We won't put the answer on the podcast.
Okay.
If you want to know the answer, you have to come on the Antioch Poker Cruise. How's that?
Good seat, still available. I tell you, I'd pay that kind of money just to find the answer.
Maybe we can figure out how to pronounce goatee, too. I know that it's nowhere near goatee because some idiot professor 30 years ago decided to have a little fun after lighting up a doobie.
Lighting up a doobie. Oh, you're killing me.
But we do have plenty of good seats left in our Apes event, and last night or Wednesday this week, the third event this year, and Chris, already just three events, we have a back-to-back champion.
Yeah, something's going on here. You know, I can't stand these no-limit specialists. What's the deal?
Yeah, Edward M111 won't be impressed when you win deuce to seven triple draw low ball. All right, right now, don't let your head get bigger than Chris Cosenza's. All right,
anybody can win a no limit hold'em banana. Try winning Badoogie. No, really, it's incredible. You know, he finds the show, wins a banana, is excited about it, and then like literally days later, wins another one. It's insane.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. And to do it, he had to beat another multiple banana winner, Hef Mike, heads up.
Yeah, Hef Mike was at my table for one hand.
One hand, and he took you out, right?
Yeah, it was the first hand of the thing. I had pocket jacks. No. He didn't play. He's like, one hand. I'm like, oh, great. I got Hef Mike on my right tonight. Yeah. Boom. Yeah. He was gone after one hand.
Well, I had somebody equally as skilled as Hef Mike at my table. I had Mike Rocky Faso.
Rocky.
Player to my right. And he just he put the beat down on Scott Ivan Drago Long in this event. I tell you, Chris, I started out and, you know, we're getting ready to teach a course with World Series Poker Bracelet owner Don Baruch. And when we had lunch with him a couple weeks ago to talk about this, he said something. He's like, you know, hey, I'm real aggressive early in tournaments. I like to get my chips early because when the blinds get bigger, I've got a little cushion. And, you know, that kind of resonated with me, right? It makes a lot of sense. So. Uh-huh. I've been working on that since then, and so this tournament here, I was a lot more aggressive than I think people are used to seeing me be, and it was even cooler because I was making these moves with like 7-5 and hitting flops with it, which is great, and then I would get like hands like pocket aces right afterwards, so when I kept the pressure on, it was just frustrating people, right?
Yeah.
And at one point, I was doing some verbal sparring there with my good friend Mike Rocky Faso because I was just taking him to school, man. I was bus driver of the year.
Let me ask you, did you say to him, I must bust you?
No, I should have because at that point, I didn't realize that he was going to cut me later on. At that point, I was just wailing around on him. And then, of course, he gets short stacked. I pick up... He picks up ace-king under the gun, makes a big raise. I make a huge raise with queen-queen in the next spot. Of course, he has to go all in. I call, and of course, he turns a king, and boom. Now I'm crippled. The Russian's cut! The Russian is cut! Then I had pocket sixes on a future hand, and he had some crap like king-nine. Called my raise and spiked a nine, and boom, I was short stacked, and boom, I was out. But he took those chips. He went on, made the final tables, and congratulations there, Mike, that teaches me to do the little trash talk in there.
See, he's not a machine. He's human. Well, Edward called in again. You know, I wish Edward would win all time because he always calls timely and always leaves a nice little message for us. So let's listen to see what he had to say after his victory.
Still in disbelief. Can't believe it myself. I was actually able to win the back-to-back No Limit Hold'em events there in the just very excited again. Scott, one thing, just to let you know, you going on last time about the name of the city. It's actually pronounced here Louisville. I guess it's just a southern thing. You know, they can't spell it different, so they got to pronounce it different. Thanks again, guy. Everybody played a great game. I'm honored to win again. Looking forward to getting my second banana.
Louisville?
Louisville.
What's next, T.J. Cloutier? Oh, wait. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. That is how he says it's pronounced. All right. Well, anyway, Louisville, that's insane. Congratulations on winning again. Back-to-back bananas. I want to see someone do a three-peat, so let's see if he can come through again in our next one.
Well, I tell you, he's trying really hard, too, because he wants us to autograph the Nanners. So I'll have to get out the Sharpie here and do that. So we appreciate that award, and I'm sure that he's going to send us a photo, which not all of our winners do, so we'll be looking forward to that. But our next event is going to be noon Eastern on Saturday, March 27th, Pot Limit Omaha, one of my favorite games. And unfortunately, Chris, neither you or I will be there.
No.
We will be on that beautiful Antioch Poker Cruise. Good seats still available.
You know, it would cost us a fortune to play.
That is true.
Apes
is
on true. The ship. So
yeah, they do have Wi-Fi on the ship, so technically we could. I just don't know how much it's going to cost, but I guarantee you it's not going to be worth playing for a $5 tournament.
That's what I mean.
That we already own.
That's what I meant by cost us a fortune, was we'd have to pay for the Wi-Fi. And then...
But I don't think it's a fortune, but it's going to be more than it's worth it.
It'd be more than I could win, I'm sure.
Hopefully we have a free roll for that on March 20th, originally scheduled for noon. As we mentioned on our previous show, it went off early. Dog got through the gate. but we understand PokerStars is trying to get a set up again. It has not been done, so... you know, if you're bored on March 20th, log in. Maybe it's there. With some seats. If not, you know, it's only $5. And there'll be more free rolls in the future. So how's that?
All right. It's a great twist on a problem there. Nice spin.
All right, Chris. Well, the NBC National Heads Up Poker Championship finished up this weekend. And hold on. We're not going to spoil it for you yet, but we will spoil it by the end of the show. But we'll give you plenty of time to turn off the show. For those of you that want to watch this made-for-TV event and not know who won, But I read an interesting column from Andrew Feldman on ESPN. And he was mentioning about what the selection criteria should be for this very special event, Chris.
Yeah, you know, I've thought about this myself. I obviously haven't read this column yet, but I've thought about this in the past, and it really does bother me that celebrities are in this thing. And, you know, I mean, I guess maybe it helps with ratings. It's bad enough that we're subjected to purely No Limit Hold'em on television now, but on top of it, we have to watch, you know, Don Cheadle and whatever. I mean, whatever. You know, I mean, that's fine, but... I don't know. For me, it should be like you know, our cover story back in May, Glenn Chorney, he won a seat because he won the EPT championship, the grand final in Europe. Right. And that made sense because that's something kind of like when you win a tournament in golf and you get to go play in the Masters. I mean, that's the way it should be, I think. You should be able to earn your way in, not just because you're a famous person. You know, I don't like it.
All right. Well, here's what Andrew wrote. He actually recycled a column from 2006 back when it started. And he wrote some what he thought his qualifications were. And then obviously he updated it here this week because now we're a couple years into this thing. Now, and he's honest that, you know, hey, there's only 64 spots here, right?
Yeah.
And Chris, there's probably, what, 4 billion poker players to choose from. So obviously, no matter what you do, people are going to be feeling snubbed, right?
Yeah.
But it seems like he said his initial list, he agrees with you, to get rid of the celebrities, get rid of the promotional winners, and that there should be a lot of automatic bids.
Yeah, I totally agree.
All right, well, I'm going to disagree. How's that?
Well, you're stupid.
Well, I am stupid. Well, let's see how stupid I am, and I'm sure the folks at NEMmagazine.com/forum will be quick to remind me how stupid I am after this. But here is the thing, and maybe it's just a business, cruel, hard Donald Trump businessman in me, but this is a made-for-TV event, Chris. It only exists for ratings on NBC. All right? I mean, it's not like you know, the World Series or something like that, which obviously has a TV component, but it's been around for a while and tries to get people together. This is set up clearly to be watched by a average Joe's like you and me at home. So, I think that the 64 players should have some kind of television pizzazz to them. I don't want some numbnut that got lucky on a good run of cards at EPT. give me a city over there. Bern, Switzerland. That's a great quality player, but is boring as anything on TV, to get an automatic bid into a made-for-TV event.
Okay, I've got one word for you.
Because I'm getting too upset about something that's not worth getting upset
about. I know,
about.
And I've got one word for you, okay? That word is national. Okay, if they didn't have that word in there, then I would kind of agree with you, because then it would be made for TV. But they call it the National Heads Up Championship, and it's not the National Heads Up Championship if people can't try to enter this on their own and not get invited because you starred in 3 movies that won Academy Awards. You know, I don't agree with. I think that just as many people would watch this if you had Hall of Famers playing in it, and you had World Poker Tour champions and World Series players of the years, you know, in this thing and filling the 64 slots. I bet you I could easily put together a 64 all poker player field, and they would get just as well ratings as any other. So I don't know. I totally disagree, and I think the word national is what throws it off. If they just said, hey, it's the NBC Heads Up Championship, then they could do whatever they want with it. But when you call it national,
man,
it's not.
All right.
Right,
so you're going to get into the semantics now. Next thing you're going to tell me, there's no such thing as a bluff. Come on. Come on.
No, but really, I mean, that word national really throws it off. It makes it sound like everybody can play in it, and these are the best ones who survived.
Would you get rid of the qualifiers for average Joes like us? This year, I believe there were 7 of them. These went to people that won their way in through either online satellites or other various things like that.
No, because just like the NCAA March Madness, people get automatic bids and get to earn their way in. You don't just put the Lakers in the NCAA tournament because they're a famous team who's really good.
Okay, so you would let people win on the NBC.com website and stuff like
that. Yeah, because they're poker players trying to get in. And, they would gloss over it anyway on TV because they show the featured matches. So they still pick the match they want to show anyway. So why not let other people try to win? And that would be a real big story. Some unknown to win it, beat Ivy heads up at the end. That'd be huge.
All right. I totally agree because that makes for compelling TV.
Yeah.
To have some guy who, 2 days ago was stocking shelves at the Gas and Sip that's now you taking down Phil Ivy. That's great TV. So I don't argue with that. Now I argue with maybe seven. That seems a little.
Yeah, that was a lot.
10% of the field. But all right. All right.
Sorry to shoot you down there in mid-flight.
We're national there. Well, here, I will say this, though. I don't think there should be any automatic qualifiers in from, if you win the World Series, the poker main event, sorry. Not good enough to get an IMA for TV show. Now, maybe if you win the World Series of Poker heads up event, all right, now you got heads up game. Maybe I'll let you in. But, obviously all that stuff should be considered by the selection committee. But, automatic, I get worried about automatic.
So you don't agree that Weber State deserves to be in the NCAAs when they win their conference game, title game or whatever?
Well, that's completely different. They won. It's not a made-for-TV basketball.
A minute ago it was completely different, but now it's not a made-for-TV basketball.
Well, it's not made-for-TV. I mean, they were doing the NCAA championship for years before TV came around and made the office pool sensation.
You know, you sound like Kay in The Godfather. Who's naive now, Scott? Of course the NCAA national title game is made for TV. They put that together to make money, not to see who the best team was.
Oh man. All right, well, we'll give you a 3-second delay here before the spoil alert. Go, skip ahead about 10 seconds. Is everybody ready? You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, cool. Here we go. Annie Duke beat Joan Rivers.
To a pulp.
Eric Seidel to win this year's event. So look forward to a yet another bigger head out there running around after winning this. And look for that. I believe it starts airing next month on NBC and finishes up in May.
I got a pretty funny story about this, too. I don't know. I didn't realize we were going to bring this up today. So our cover story this month is Paul Wasika.
Right.
And I'd finished writing it and designing it, and I had been getting the updates from the National Heads Up via email from the media people there. And, well, he had won a couple of matches, I guess, and then it said he was facing Annie Duke. So I said, well, I'm going to take this moment to text Paul Wasika and let him know that the story's done and it came out really well, and we'll send him some extra copies because I quoted one of his friends in the story as well, so he could give it to his friend. And in that text I said, and by the way, kick Annie Duke's ass. And he texts me back. He says, hey, thanks. Who is this? And I said, oh, it's Chris from Annie Up. And he's like, oh, all right, man, I will. Now, the other funny story is a quote in the actual story that I wrote about him, where when he won the Tunica event, he had really pretty much just destroyed this one guy who had a huge chip stack at one point, and he got lucky on him or made a really big hand on him, like a three hands in a row or something, and took all of his chips. And then he said, at least he didn't piss away his chips. He did well with them. And that's one of the things that he doesn't mind. If he gets knocked out of a tournament, he likes to see that player go on and win, because then he didn't waste his chips. And so I was really tempted to send him another text saying, hey, Paul, at least you didn't piss your chips away, but I didn't do it.
You'll say that when you butt call him.
Yeah, when I butt call him. Oh, my God. Okay, so we got some good stuff on the news desk today. Let's start.
All right, a group of robbers made a brazen daylight raid of a live televised European Poker Tour event in Berlin, Germany, making off with more than $300,000. Authorities, Chris, say the entire robbery was caught on videotape and shouldn't be difficult to apprehend the gang, yet they're still on the loose.
I wonder if the authorities have checked the alibis of George Clooney and Brad Pitt on that.
Yes,
right? Yes,
it does sound like Ocean 19, doesn't it?
But, the winner of that event, whoever it is, will be in the Heads Up Poker Championship next year.
Yeah, with $300,000 bucks, a little light. Oh, man, robbing it on a live television. Boy, that's some serious kahunas there.
TMZ reports that golfer and recovering sex addict Tiger Woods has reportedly turned down a $75 million sponsorship package from Irish online poker site Paddy's Poker.
$75 million, Chris. $75 million.
How sad is it when your sport can't give Tiger Woods money? I mean, that's just...
$75 million, he says no. You know how many discreet hookers you could buy for $75 million, Chris? Tiger could be on easy street for the rest of his life with here. But you know, no.
Jeez, $75 million. God.
I've been playing the lottery since I was 7 years old, all right?
Seven.
And all to try to win a $1 million jackpot. This guy, someone gives him a $75 million lottery ticket. Nope, sorry. I'm busy. I'm hanging out in Mississippi here. I can't do it. The world is not fair, Chris.
Man, they give me 75 bucks, I'd wear their patch.
No doubt. No doubt. I might even outbid you. I might do it for 73.50.
It's just insane.
All right. Finally, this week, an annual Alaskan charity poker tournament was held last week. Survived only after organizers eliminated a pre-tournament dinner, Chris. State regulators said that by charging entrance $200 for the dinner and tournament, the event amounted to illegal gambling. The event normally draws 700 players. I think they send somebody to the World Series, give them a bracelet. But this year, illegal gambling.
Oh, thank God we got that resolved. I mean, I wouldn't be able to sleep tonight if I didn't know that tournament was going to be able to exist again.
Well, brutal. I mean, it's Alaska. I mean, where else are you going to play a poker up in Alaska? No wonder they get 700 people, man. The people probably look forward to it. And because they wanted to give them a nice dinner or a nice little spread there, probably had some, you know, Alaskan king crabs or something.
Nice.
And they can't charge for it because it's gambling. Oh, you know, I'm just so tired of this.
I think that 700 is like their entire population, too.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey,
yeah.
You know, do you know what they served for dessert?
Baked Alaska.
Very good, very good.
Wow. We're doing really well in not offending our listeners, right? Lasted the whole week.
Well, let's see who we can offend by listening to this hotline clip.
Hey, fellas, it's Ted from San Bernardino, California. So I'm a bit behind on the podcast, had a second kid and all that, and I wanted to thank you guys for the awesome one-on-two interview that the good doctor put on you guys. I just appreciated you guys opening up. I feel that much more bought into the podcast and enjoy the show since I know who I'm listening to even more. Keep up the excellent work, and good luck in your expansion.
Aw, shucks, Chris. I like when we get nice calls.
Me too. You know, it's so nice when they appreciate us. And even Frank, too, coming up with that great idea. It's great when the nation, you know, appreciates what we're doing. And thanks for calling us.
They like us. They really like us.
The phone number is 813-448-1120. And if you call and leave a message, we'll give you something cool like we're about to do right now.
We're going to send you a $10 staking package from getastake.com. Email us at podcast@nammagazine.com, and we'll get that wonderful prize out to you.
Hey, when you read the letter that's coming up now, will you do it in the same New York accent that she has?
No, I am not offending our good friend that's up there.
No, it wouldn't offend Thitza. She's cool, but I love that accent.
Well, so are the other people that were upset with us. They're cool too. They make good points though. So I'm gonna play this straight. All right.
All right. I just wish she had called in because I love hearing the old New York accent. It makes me miss home a little bit.
A little wistful for the old country.
Yes.
All right. Here we go. Thitza from New York writes in. I was in a local 1-2 cash game this weekend and came upon this young kid raised mid position to about $12. I called on the blinds. With 6-6, heads up, I flop top set on a rainbow board and check. Kid bets $25, I call, turn is a blank. I check, he bets $40, I pop it to 120, that's right, that's it, you take him down. Takes literally more than 8 minutes! 8 minutes in a 1-2 cash game, Chris.
Jeez.
Someone calls the clock on him, and I imagine it's the same guy that called the clock on you in the poker piece. And she says, this is where it gets interesting. The clock is 2 minutes, and she also pauses to... mentioned that the fact that she'd never seen a clock for 2 minutes, which I haven't either. Crazy.
Neither. Yeah.
But when it gets to 5 seconds, there's a verbal countdown, Chris. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Yeah, one's next.
Yeah.
One. On one, she says the kid drops his chips in the pot, but the floor man says his hand is dead. WTF, Chris. It was like dangling a big chocolate truffle in front of me like a pendulum, and I open my mouth and the chips go in. And you toss it in the garbage.
Oh.
She says, isn't it 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 dead? Isn't there a beat after one, Chris? What do you think?
Absolutely, 100%. If you watch basketball and they want to see if the shot goes in before the clock expires, there are digits between 1 and 0. There clearly is a second there that she should have been given credit for and gotten all that money.
Yep. Yep.
Said. And I just want to take this moment to say, we're sorry. Your name is Thitza, not Thitza. I don't know why Scott keeps calling you Thitza. It's scaring me. But, but we're going to leave that in. But you agree, right? One, there's definitely a beat after one.
Yeah, there should be a beat after that. I mean, what are you going to say? I mean, she's in a tough spot. What are you going to say? Hey, whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then obviously, she knows that she's going to win, right?
Yeah, but you know what? It's not like she has a magazine that she has to protect the integrity of and doesn't want the foreman to argue with her, make a big scene and ruin their chances of making more money in the future. So I think she should have made a stink.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, unfortunate pizza.
Pizza.
You didn't get that extra money there, that big chocolate truffle you wanted. But maybe our good friend Jason Holly at J Design Playing Cards can make his cards out of chocolate truffles for you.
Nice.
I probably won't, but he'll send you a good deck of cards anyhow from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Anti. Yup.
I think today we get to solve a mystery. Is that right? Usually I get this wrong, but today we actually get to solve a mystery. That's correct.
You are correct.
All right, let's listen to part one.
Greetings. This is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, The Case of the Lucky Break. We are in the second hour of a big field multi-table tournament, and the level is 120-240 with an ante of 25. Folds to me on the button, and I'll make a positional raise here with what turns out to be ace of diamonds, eight of clubs.
Business as usual, sir.
I make it 720 in the small blind folds, but the big blind calls the 480 and has about 7,100 behind. The pot is 1680, and we see a flop of the four of spades, the nine of hearts, and the queen of hearts, and our big blind checks. I have position, and as I get ready to c-bet, I get more worried about the big blind's range and the effect of a check raise here. I decide to defer my usual c-bet and hope to benefit from position later in the hand. After I check, the turn card is the eight of spades, and now our big blind comes out firing 840, which is about half the pot.
I don't give up that easily, sir.
Now, I did improve. I do have position, and the bet size and the pot size is still not overwhelming. So I decide to call here and see if I can pick up any more clues or make a play on the river. It's not an aggressive play, but I'm hoping it looks strong. The pot is now 3360 when the river comes to two of diamonds, and our big blind suddenly bets out 2100 here. So now, what is your read, and does that mean you fold or call?
All right, Chris, I'm going to start here again. Okay. I think we missed some vital information by not betting the flop, didn't we?
Jeez.
We don't know whether the bet on the turn was because he showed weakness on the flop, whether we were behind, or both, because we don't know. And calling on the turn certainly didn't deter our opponent, so we gave up control of the hand, Chris, I say. So if you're going to give up the control of the hand, wave the white flag, buy a Dido CD, and surrender.
So you're just saying we should have done a continuation bet because we had control of the pot and wanted to take it down right there, and then if he had called, we would have information? I don't know. I mean, does a bet and a call give you the same info as a check? I don't know. I guess so.
No, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is when we check the flop, and I'm not necessarily saying in all situations you need to keep betting on the flop, but when you check on the flop and then somebody bets out on you in turn, you don't know, you never know whether that means that person had something on the flop and is now taking control of the hand, or whether he said, hey, you know, this guy raised me pre-flop. Now he checks the flop. I'm going to take a stab and find out whether he really has a hand. So you don't know.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, we caught something there on the turn, and so we needed to stay in. But, you know, maybe at that point we raise on the turn to find out. I mean, it's I don't know. But we don't know where we are now. So I don't know how you can call when you don't have any idea where you are.
Okay, so you are folding at the end.
Oh, absolutely. I fold every. Well, it's just a matter of how I get there.
Well, I fold too. I mean, we have third pair on a very coordinated board. there could be a straight there. It could be suited connectors that made two pair. All kinds of stuff could happen on that turn. So, you know, if the guy had a busted draw, like a busted flush draw, I thought, well, wouldn't he have bet the turn, bet the flop instead of the turn, I mean? I just feel like even if we're ahead, which we may be, I don't know if a call's worth it in this situation. And I know the forum, too, they all said fold, right?
Yep, unanimously fold.
Okay. All right, well, we'll see what happens in the case of the lucky break.
Welcome back. When the 8 falls on the turn and he bets, either he had some of it on the flop and was going to check raise me until I checked behind, or he has little to nothing and just took a stab at the pot. When the river comes, why does he not check and try to get the showdown? And if he does have a hand like King-Queen, why does he bet 2,100 and 3,360? My guess is he has a broken draw or a marginal holding here. But it's very probable that he would follow this line with middle pair here, and that makes this a very marginal decision with third pair.
You know, sometimes the right answer is, it's very hard to find, sir. It's not that, it's hard. That's all I'm saying, sir. It's not an easy thing.
I'm forced to work off instinct here, but unlike the last episode, I decide to call, still expecting to see a hand like King 9. In the end, he tables 5 of clubs, 4 of clubs for a pair of 4s, and I take down the pot with a pair of 8s. I still think the safer move was to fold here, but I'll take his ill-fated river bet monies. Until next time, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com reminding you that sometimes a so-called hero call is just a call.
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Hey, Chris, joining us today is Antonio Pinzari. He's a longtime poker player, author, and phenomenal storyteller. I tell you, Chris, every time I get on the phone with this guy, he's just got great stuff. He has me in stitches. And today we asked him to come on the show and regale us with tales of yesteryear. He also recently started a terrific 2-hour weekly poker show called Poker Wars Live that airs from West Palm Beach, Florida, but can be heard worldwide on the interwebs at pokerwar.info. Antonio, how you doing today?
I'm great. How you doing, Chris and Scott?
Doing well.
Always doing well.
I'm happy to be on this podcast. I've heard that you guys do phenomenal things on here for such a long period of time, and I like the fact that you bring poker all over the world. That's always fun and exciting.
You've been talking to correct. Scott for too long.
Yeah, you're correct. We're absolutely phenomenal, so I appreciate you reminding us of that. All right, Antonio, here's the thing. You've lived a real good, long life. You're still young at heart, but you've been around
absolutely.
Most of our listeners really didn't know anything about poker until Chris Moneymaker won the World Series, the main event. So let's start us off here. Tell us a little bit about how poker has changed from when you first started all the way up to here in 2010.
Well, I turned professional in 1976. My first trip to Las Vegas, I got out of the service in 1969. I was in for 4 years and came home from overseas. And I snuck out to Las Vegas because I promised myself, if I ever made it home alive, I'd definitely go out and see Las Vegas. And I fell in love with Vegas. Of course, it was uniquely different in those days. You had the Flamingo and Golden Gate, Tropicana, Stardust, Riviera. So I could go on and on and on. Frontier, Showboat, Golden Nugget. And I happened to go downtown, and there was a place called Binion's. And I walked in, and they had poker tables. In those days, primarily we played 7-stud and lowball. And I kind of won some money, and I went home kind of excited and vowed I'd start going back. And I did. I started going back, and after quitting the police department in 1975, I turned professional in 76. So started going out regularly and playing the World Series events, and got to know a lot of the fellas out there. Got to was befriended by guys like Tom McAvoy, who's been on my radio show several times, Amarillo Slim, guys that like Puggy Pearson, they liked me because I had a funny accent. You know, they call me a Yankee, and of course I don't know how that happened, since Plymouth Rock was 1620 and we started the whole country. You know, we don't have accents from Boston, so that was primarily it. But I became a kind of like a child prodigy in mathematics at a very young age, and was tested regularly at MIT, and numbers were always, I couldn't read or write, I was very dyslexic, but I read at a fifth grade level when I was about 14, and I was doing calculus when I was 8 years old, so that's how it kind of evolved. So I also love history, so if there's anything you want to know about World Series, I can just about tell you exactly. I can tell you what hands won the most. I can tell you who the players were. I can tell you the dates and almost the times. And I've known them all. I still know them all. I still have regular contact with most of them. So a lot of interesting stories. Like, for example, when Dan Harrington won the 1995 World Series of Poker, he won it with a nine of diamonds and an eight of diamonds. The very next year, Huck Seed won it in 96. Same hand, nine of diamonds, eight of diamonds. So there's a lot of interesting facts, little-known facts, that they're kind of trivia, but they add color and flavor to the game, and interesting things that once something happens, it's more likely to happen again. So anything you want to know about the World Series, I think I'm pretty much an expert and can tell you.
Now, how do you keep in touch with these guys now that you're in Florida? Is it more of a, you know, you get out there once in a while, they come see you, or is it strictly phone?
Yeah, I go out. I'll be going out again this year to play in my 15th World Series. I missed it for 6 years because of family issues, but I'm back now, and I'm playing stronger than ever. And I talked to Tom McAvoy, and I talked to, I don't get to speak to Amarillo much anymore. Interestingly enough, Amarillo Slim wasn't born in Amarillo, Texas. He lived there. He went there. Because he, of course, got a lot of action there. But he was born in a place called Johnson, Arkansas. His name is Thomas Austin Preston, Jr. He's born in 1928, so he's in his 80s right now. He's 82, 83 years of age. And, one of the original rounders. And he's one of my benefactors, actually. He taught me a lot. He said to me one night, Antonio, did you ever play Texas Hold'em? I said, no, actually, what is it? So he taught me the game in about 5 minutes, and the next day, $3,600 less in my wallet, I thought I'd better learn how to play this game because I don't know that much about it.
Have you ever challenged Amarillo Slim to a scooter race?
No, I haven't, actually. He's in a scooter now, but that's only because, you know, I hope I make it to 82 and can drive around a scooter. That would be a fun little deal.
Now, I tell you, he and Doyle's races are going to be legendary, I think.
Well, you know, even TJ's riding around in one now. I mean, you know, these guys are up there in age. And, you know, when you're in the Rio and you're going down to play in an event, you got to walk about a half a mile from the casino. That's what it feels like.
Trust me, Chris whines about it the entire way.
Yeah. Well, it's downhill going into the event rooms, but it's uphill coming back. So, especially if you took a bad beat, it's a long walk home.
Yeah, it's just like Caesar's Palace in Vegas. They got the nice conveyor belt pulling you in, but when you get knocked out on your ass and you're broke, you got to take the stairs.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question, Scott. What hand won the most in the World Series main event?
What hand won the most?
Yep.
Well, I'm going to guess it would have to be the hand that Jamie Gold won with.
It's Queen Nine.
No, actually, no. Pocket Nines have won it three times. When Joe Catter won it last year, that's the third time Pocket Pocket Nines. Jamie Gold won with a Queen Nine, and that's the only time that happened. Interestingly enough, 5-4 won it twice. Chris Moneymaker won with a 5-4. He beat Sammy Faha. Faha had a Jack 10, and Chris won it with a 5-4. 5-9's won it a couple of times, ace-9. Pocket Pairs have won it 12 times in the 40-year history.
Jeez.
Wow. Well, hey, I'm going to put you on the spot here because you told me to challenge you, right? Because you know everything, right?
Not everything, but a lot of everything.
Oh, you're backing off. All right, I want to know who finished 666th in the 2008 main event.
That would be Joe Conte, the Count of
Poker. Oh, you got it!
One of my students. The reason I know that is he's told us it 1,154 times. But actually, I expect to hear it once or twice more, you know, so nonetheless, he's also a co-host on my show every Monday evening, Poker Wars Live, and Joe's a great guy, and he hasn't been around it a long time, but he's a brilliant student, and he understands the game, and he's eager to learn, and he's really a sophisticated, educated player. That's the way I describe his game.
Now, you know,
that's one I knew.
Those are two words I don't use to describe Chris. So,
whenever I'm on your show, Antonio, you know, we're always, you know, always talking about Tom McAvoy, your buddy. You know, you're always dropping these names, all these guys you're friends with. But I want to know, who are the players that you just despise?
Absolutely despised.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to say, well, there's about a half a dozen of them I absolutely despise. But
yeah, plenty of time. Go ahead.
only because of their shenanigans on the table. They lack etiquette. They lack class. They're people that will call you a name. Hey, look, I was good friends with Stu Unger for a long time. He spit in a dealer's face at Binion's. In fact, he was barred. He'd won it. And the following year, Benny Binion barred him from the World Series event. And if it wasn't for his son Jack, Stu wouldn't even, the defending champion, wouldn't even be allowed to play in it that year. And when he first I'm trying to think who I really despise. Well, Unger won it in 80. In 81, he doubled up. He's really the only guy who's ever won it three times. Johnny Moss won it three times, but the first event, he was elected the winner. It was a timed event. It wasn't, a freestyle event or a shootout or anything like that. It ended, and they played five different games in the beginnings. There was only seven players. Binion invited six players in 1970. And really, the history, it evolved. There was a fella his name was Tom Moore. He was from San Antonio, Texas. In 1969, he held the Texas Gambling Reunion, and that was held in Reno, Nevada. And a fella that probably no one's ever heard of, Crandall Addington.
Yep,
he's the only player to place in the top 10 eight times. He won that event, and he encouraged Binion along with this fella Tom Moore. And Tom Moore really had the original idea, and Binion carried on and started in 70, invited six players plus himself, and that's how it all started. And so true champion, greatest player ever, my opinion, Stu Unger. He absolutely positively won it three times. And the last time Stewie won it, 1997, he was really in bad shape. I mean, he wasn't even coherent most of the time. He was just kind of in a drug stupor, and his nose had collapsed from so much cocaine abuse. And by that time, he was smoking crack. And he's still a genius. The guy once won a $100,000 bet. He could call the last card in a six-deck shoe. Bob Stupak bet him $100,000. In a six-deck blackjack shoe. They ran the entire deck, and he said he could call the last card exactly, and he did.
Oh,
he won $100,000. Now, if you think about that, if you really want to analyze that, if you have a 52-card deck times six, it's 312 cards. So 311 of them he memorized, so to speak, and bingo, there you go. He won $100,000.
Well, that's a great story, Antonio, but I noticed how you skirted the question.
There's a couple of guys out of New Jersey I really don't care for, and I'm not going to be crass enough to say their names. I'll tell you next Monday night on my radio show. That's a segue into listening to my show. I'll tell you the six worst poker players I've ever played with because they're ignorant. Okay.
We talked on your show on Monday about TJ Cloutier, who's going to be on our poker cruise coming up here at the end of the month. Good seats still available. and your co-host Joe asked, he asked me why TJ doesn't quite get the attention these days that other players do. even though he's got a phenomenal record, you know, $10 million in winnings and six bracelets. And, you know, I kind of think it's because, you know, he doesn't play to the TV cameras like these young kids now, or, you know, the fights and the showboating and stuff. But, you know, what I like about these old players like TJ is they are great storytellers, and I think that can make good TV. What kind of
stories? I'll tell you a quick story that TJ once told me. He came in second in the main event in 1985 to a fellow named Bill Smith. Now, Bill Smith was a good card player, but he was very, very tight card player. But through the course of the evening, he would drink. And the more he drank, the looser he got. And he never played well until he was really drunk. I'm talking about fall down drunk.
Wow,
and
sounds like me.
Actually, yeah, exactly. He won with pocket threes, he beat TJ's ace three, I think, in 1985. But these stories TJ can tell you, I mean, first of all, he was a football player. He's born in California, and he went to the University of California. He played in the Rose Bowl in 1959. People would never know that about the guy.
Right.
He was in the Army. He played in the Canadian Football League for Toronto and I think Montreal Alouettes or Toronto Argonauts. I know a couple of teams up there. He worked on oil rigs. I mean, and first of all, if you know TJ, I mean, the guy's... he's like 6'3" or 6'4", and he's got huge shoulders and long sloping arms. You could tell this guy was a football player when you look at him. But greatest guy in the world, 80 tournament, major tournament career wins. No one will ever duplicate that. Of course, you know, you have to factor in a lot now the fact that most of the tournaments, I mean, six people in 71, Chris Moneymaker won it, there were 839 players. The following year, there were 2,576 players. And Greg Raymer won it that year. He beat David Williams. Raymer had pocket eights. So there's such, you know, I have a feeling like Phil Ivey, I don't know that he'll ever make another final table. You know, it's probably a once-in-a-lifetime thing now, and you're going to see 8, 10, 12 new players getting down into those numbers very frequently now. It's just next to impossible. There was at one point 2,000 well-known pros in the world. Now there's 6,000 well-known pros in the world. So and there's so many events spread in so many different areas and worldwide. I mean, it's hard to duplicate all these things. You know, the 1970 World Series of Poker was a series of cash games. They played five-card stud. They played deuce to seven. They played low-ball draw. They played Raz and seven-card stud, and, of course, Texas Hold'em. And that first event, it wasn't won. It was Johnny Moss was actually elected by the other players as the best all-around champion. So it's evolved from that to its present-day format, which is tremendous.
How sad are you that these great games that you just mentioned aren't played very much anymore? And what was your favorite of those games?
Actually, I was always I loved seven card stud because you had hidden strength in your hand and exposed strength on the board. And if you just simply paid attention, you could literally count down the number of outs you had that may have been available in the deck. Based on exposed strength. I always was a great seven-card stud player, but once I got introduced to Texas Hold'em and started to understand communal cards, seven stud now, I don't play anything really but Hold'em. I'm starting to enjoy the six-handed, which was the first year they introduced it last year, events, and, you know, no limit. And I like limit Hold'em a lot because it's a very forgiving game. And I wasn't much of a Raz player, you know, but I've started to a couple of times at the Kennel Club here in West Palm Beach, the best card room around in South Florida, in my opinion, the Palm Beach Kennel Club. I finished in the top 10 twice. I'm going to say hoss, but you're going to say horse. The horse tournament. So I enjoy playing a hoss now. It's a fun game for me, and it just you're more well rounded and more well balanced player if you understand several other games. If you understand four or five different games, it will help one or two games more specifically. If you're a good Raz player, I believe you'll be a good low ball player. If you're a good low ball player, I believe you'll be a good limit hold'em player. I mean, one feeds into the other, in my opinion. I always have, because the numbers run so closely together.
So I think in ninth grade algebra, I learned the associative property. So that would mean that if I'm a good Raz player, that means I'm a good limit player, right?
I would think so. Yeah, absolutely. Do you know where the expression "chip in a chair" came from? Another little bit of trivia that no one knows, but everyone thinks they know. Where's "chip in a chair" come from?
I thought it was from a Lay's commercial.
That's from Jack Strauss. That's from Jack Strauss, right? He went all in the World Series.
Oh, absolutely.
And he had a chip under the napkin.
No, he won it with one chip in 1982, a chip in a chair. He's more well-known for one of the greatest poker bluffs ever. In a cash game once, he had won three or four hands in a row. He was on a rush, and he had predetermined that he was going to go all in, virtually all in this cash game. The next hand, he was going to raise pre-flop regardless of his two cards. So he looked down at a seven deuce. He raised pre-flop, got one caller, and the flop came 7-3-3. And he bet out, and the fella came over the top of him. And then he raised the fella, and the fella called. The turn card was a deuce, and he put in a big cash bet. And the fella kind of pondered. And then Jack said to him, I'll tell you what, if you give me $25, I'll let you pick either card. Now, remember, he had a seven deuce in the hole. And so the guy thought about it, and he paid him $25. And he turned over a card, and of course it was the deuce. And at that point, the fella put him on a full house, deuces full of threes, and he laid down this huge, and that was supposedly one of the best bluff stories ever told. And I don't believe in bluffs, as Scott knows. I don't believe this. Anytime you put money in a pot, it's not a bluff. Well, so another little interesting story, but you were right. They're very good. Most people attribute that to Sailor Roberts or to Johnny Moss chipping a chair, but it's actually Jack Treetop. He was 6'6". I remember the first time I ever saw him, and he was supposedly this great basketball player from UCLA or Texas Tech or someplace like that. I can't remember where, but he was a big guy.
They depicted that bluff on that movie High Roller, the Stu Unger story. They showed that.
But it's attributed to Stewie, but it wasn't Stewie.
They showed it in the Stewie movie. Jack Strauss did it in the movie.
Oh, I never saw the movie, so yeah. One day I'm going to have to rent.
You're not missing
anything. don't bother Antonio. You lived it. You can't improve on that crappy movie, unfortunately.
Let's talk about Poker Wars before I go.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the impetus for starting the show, and tell folks how they can listen to it?
Well, actually, if you tune in to locally in South Florida, WBZT AM 1230, Monday evenings from 7 to 9 p.m., you're going to hear most of the time these guys from Ante Up Magazine, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long, kick off the show for about the first 20 or 30 minutes. They tell us all about Ante Up Magazine, my favorite and only poker magazine I read.
Shucks, we're blushing.
no, you're not. we also like to have people stream on the internet at www.pokerwars.info, I-N-F-O, and you can hear all the archive shows all the way back to October of last year up until last Monday night show. And we welcome listening audience. We had a nice call from California. That's our longest call other than one that came in from England. So we're always looking for one more state to call in, one more part of the listening audience. And the call-in numbers are given out on the show. They're on the internet. And if you want to participate and call in and just simply say hello, we'd love to hear from you. And if you've got a good history poker story, I would love to hear it. You know, if you want to learn about, you ask me any question, I'll try and answer it. You got a hand for us to play today before we go?
Yes, absolutely. But we got a little more time. I want to know if they go to PokerWars.info. You've also written a couple nice books, haven't you, Antonio?
I wrote a book on Texas Hold'em, an ABC book called How to Win at Home and in Casinos. It's primarily for a beginner, but it has a real solid foundation. I mean, it tells you how to play, and it's easy to read. It's not a big book. It's only about 78 pages. It's not certainly like Winning Systems or anything like that, but it'll get you pointed in the right direction. I recently wrote one called Poker Wars. That's how we named the radio show, based on Sun Tzu's principles. If you take The Art of War by Sun Tzu and you compare it to a poker table, it's basically the same thing. You're on the felt, you're at war, you're surrounded by enemies, and his principles apply to almost every hand you ever play. It's real interesting reading because once you start reading it, you start to remember hands you play in the specific way the hand evolved, and it's like him guiding his army in combat. So that's a good little one. I also have one that when I do my seminars, Antonio Pinzari, School of Winning Texas Hold'em. It's primarily a seminar book. We have them all on the internet. They're all free. Just, you know, pay shipping and handling, and it's right on our website.
All right, Antonio, we thank you for joining us and for letting us invade Poker Wars every week. We're glad we're finally able to return the favor for you. And you did say you want to stick around for our Hand of the Week, correct?
I would try.
You'll try. I think you'll do better than try. And you're going to have too, because it's a limit hand, and Chris is going to be completely useless.
Well, a limit is the best game you could ever play. It's better than no limit.
Man, now you're making me blush again. I love you, Antonio.
If you understand the real essence of communal cards, limit is better than Social Security. I haven't had a job since 1976, and you'll be surprised at how many top professionals play only limit poker. I mean, no limit is a fad based on Chris Moneymaker and everyone watching it on TV. Most of the people that play this game learned it on TV, and you know, they don't aspire to learn much more than they know aces beat kings, and if they put in a lot of money, the guy might fold. So that's primarily the extent of a lot of players' knowledge, unfortunately. Makes it tougher for the guys that really have to play good poker, because you can't put people on hands. And it's difficult at best. I got knocked out with a full house last night to a guy who had no business playing an ace-six offsuit to a very large preflop. And he riveted an ace and got a higher full house. I mean, it's nature of the game. They just don't understand that ace is still king in Florida, though. If you have an ace, you don't even need a second card. One ace is sufficient.
You'll love this hand, then, because our hero here has not one ace, but two aces in it. And let me set it up here. That hands come from Brad Stooksberry, and not sure where he's from, but he was playing in Tunica. So this is a live 4-8 limit hold'em game at Tunica Casino. He says, honestly, it was the worst table he's ever played at. And by worst, he says, I mean worst players. So really, I guess it was the best. Gotta like that thinking. He said he was stuck in the game, and he ended up losing for the session. But here was the hand that he had. He is under the gun plus two, and he looks down at ace of clubs, ace of hearts. Obviously, the under the gun player limps to him, and of course he's going to raise here. Gets four callers, kind of like the good old No Fold'em Florida game here, Antonio, correct?
Yep.
And the limpers included the big blind and the original limper. Pot's $34, and we go to a flop of Jack of Diamonds, 10 of Hearts, 2 of Clubs. The big blind leads out. The initial limper folds, and it comes to us. What do you do, Antonio?
He slow played his aces. He didn't raise with them pre-flop.
No, he did raise. He did raise.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear that.
He did raise, got four calls.
Okay, so You get four calls. Well, after the flop, most people aren't aware of this. If you have pocket aces and you are against two or more players after the flop, you're a 3-2 underdog. So the first limper, I had in both blinds called, I think you said, or just the big
blind? The big blind called and the original limper. And now on the flop here, the big blind leads out into us, and that original limper folds.
All right, so
your second
the
act, and
diamonds,
it's a bet.
Ten of hearts, deuce of clubs, I think you said.
That is correct.
All right, so he bets out, and at this point, he's betting out $4.
That's correct.
And it went into a $34 pot.
That's right.
All right, and now that's the big blind. Did the limper call at that point?
No, he folded, so it's on us now.
Okay, so now it's on us with pocket aces. At this point, I'm going to have to raise to $8. and see where the hand evolves from there. If I have one or two people behind me, I want them out. Or if I get raised behind me, I know where my aces stand. But with a jack of diamonds, ten of hearts, and a deuce of club, that's a rainbow board. I would suspect big blind betting, he probably was holding two pair or a small set. But I would be more inclined to say, without a two pair, he would probably be holding a jack big card, like jack king, jack queen, jack ace. That would be my guess, and I'd put the $8 in simply to see where it went. It's not a lot of money into, you've got $38 into the pot, you'd be putting $8 in there. Yeah, of course, you have the original amount of the big blind, so you've got at that point a $12 investment into a $38 pot. So it's not a bad call. I don't want to let him draw another card without putting more money in. That's my opinion. I just have to see that he's... I'm going to say he had a big jack or a two pair. And, of course, blind hands, 10-2 wouldn't be unreasonable. Jack deuce wouldn't be unreasonable. But at this point, I have top pair. I'm putting in a raise.
Okay, that's exactly what our hero does. Middle position player three bets us. A late position player cold calls to $12. The big blind folds, and it gets back to us. Do we cap?
Nope. We fold.
We fold. Excellent. I like that. Now, why do we fold, Antonio?
Because we just got three bet.
Yep.
We just got three bet, and a guy isn't three betting in a cash game unless he has a minimum of two pair. And at this point, I'm going to say there's a set there, probably a set of tens.
And, of course, we got a late position player that cold calls at $12, too, which is equally scary.
Yeah, once you get a cold call after that, you've got to get out because that's the player I'm most afraid of, the cold call. But just the three-bet guy with players behind him, I've got to give him credit for two big pair and not certainly an overpair like kings to that board. He's not on any type of a draw. And the cold call player is the guy now that I think those two, one of them's going to win the hand, and I'm going to have to say it's probably the better as opposed to the cold caller. The cold caller probably had some type of a mid-pair to go along with the board and maybe even an open-ended straight draw and was willing to gamble. You know, but a three-bet in limit poker is a big bet, very, very big bet.
Okay, well, our hero did not take our advice, Antonio. He capped it. Both players call. Pot's $86. We go to the turn. It's the 10 of spades. So the board now is jack of diamonds, 10 of hearts, 2 of clubs, 10 of spades, and it's on
and
us.
And full, no doubt. That's my guess at this point. What are you laughing at?
No, I'm laughing because you're correct. And this is where people get in trouble with aces and limit, I think.
Yep. Aces are eighth nuts on ninth nuts after the flop. Don't people understand that? If this board is a jack, a ten, and a deuce, they can be three jacks, three tens, three deuces, jacks and tens, jacks and deuces, tens and deuces. Count those number nut hands, and now what? They can now, if you didn't have aces, let's say you had something like nines. You could also have queens, jacks, and kings. So you can go from eighth or ninth nuts after the flop. You have one pair with pocket aces. One pair. He overplayed the hand. Sorry. And I was sure that when the board paired, it was filled. I'm going to say the three bet had a full house, probably tens full of jacks.
Okay. Well, it's on us, and we check. The middle position player who three bet his last time bets out. Late position just calls again. And it gets back to us. At this point now, Antonio, we obviously are behind, but the $8 into what now is a hundred and...
After the turn, the bet doubles to $16.
No, this is a 4-8 table. So the bet's $8 now. Yeah.
Oh, all right. After the turn, $8. Excuse me.
So since we can close out the betting here, do we put our extra $8 here? To win the
You know what they're going to say in Florida? Well, I'm pot committed. and you know what? I still have two outs. Let me see. Two times two. That would be about a 4%. I got a 5% chance mathematically to hit this ace and have aces full of 10. Of course, you could chase the dream 10-ace as well and have 10s full of aces, but he's already wasted. His big mistake, and this is most common with big pairs and limit poker, to call a 3-bet and call a player who called a 3-bet with only, you know, 8th or 9th nuts. It's kind of he made his big mistake after the flop by calling that bet. He should have laid down the aces, got away from the hand. At this point, based on what you've said and his actions prior to this, I'm sure he's going to call.
He does. The pot's now $110. We go to the river, which is the 4 of clubs. So our final board is Jack of diamonds, 10 of hearts, deuce of clubs, 10 of spades, 4 of clubs. Our hero obviously checks, missing that miracle ace. The middle position player bets out. The next player calls, and before we can act, the middle position player shows his hand, Antonio. Queen of spades, jack of spades. Stunned
open
silence.
Hand, face up.
Yep.
Okay.
So we obviously got this hand beat. Obviously, the other player just called. Now with this added information now, do we decide to throw $8 in here and hope that we can beat the other player, or are we still pretty convinced that we're going to lose?
Well, at that point, I'm sure he's going to throw the, because he now has, you know, he's got aces and tens, and there's no straight, there's no flush here. You know, he's alive to beat one player who's made cold raise calls twice. The second one wasn't a raise, it was a bet, but nonetheless, he's calling, of course. What's $8 now that you've gone this far is probably his rationale. And it's not wrong, because we love guys like him. I'm going to encourage him to continue to do that throughout his career, because that pays my mortgage and my electric bill and all the other things. I'm being really facetious and kind of a wise guy, but nonetheless, yeah, I'm sure he called, and I'm sure there's a full house with a Jack 10 to the guy who called the cold raise.
All right, well, our hero thinks for a bit and decides to raise, figuring that the late position player cannot have a 10 here and not raise. What do you think about that, Antonio? I mean, obviously, this player he'd been cold calling all the way, and then the river, he just calls. So if he had a bow, wouldn't you not try to put in a raise at that point? Are you really worried that the other player has you beat?
Well, having played with different type players my entire life, and playing with, I'm going to say, better players, for lack of a better word, I have to respect the fellow who made the cold call. I really have to do it. But and I anticipate, based on my experience, he's won that hand. Naturally, I don't think the ace-10s are going to hold up. If they did, I don't know what the cold raise caller was doing in the hand. That's why I had to put, when the board paired, a full house. So, right. I don't know. I can't keep giving information to these guys, because it's not the type of hand that is going to commonly be played. I mean, this guy had a jack-queen, and he's putting in raises with top pair, disregarding right. Over cards, you know, like queens, kings, and aces. I mean, see, these are two players that you're not going to find pretty much. Well, you might find them all over the country now, I guess. It's hard for me to, you know. I always rag on the Florida players because I've been stuck here for 6 years. But nonetheless, all right. So finish the hand for us, please.
All right. So we raise. Interestingly enough, the middle position player who had opened his hands calls our raise, which I love those players. The late position
he
player
called
calls
with an open hand to a raise.
Yes, he did, sir. Yes, he did.
Get his phone number. Tell me where he lives. Please. Wherever he's playing, I want a seat. And I definitely want to be to his left side.
All right, he calls. Our remaining hero also calls and tables 10 of diamonds, king of clubs for 3 tens. No full house, but still big enough to win this pot.
Mm-hmm. And his original hand was 10 of diamonds and 3 of clubs?
King of clubs. King of clubs.
Oh, king of clubs. Oh, I thought you said, oh, now I understand. Okay, king 10. Yep. One of the trouble hands that often gets you in trouble. Well, 3 tens, I would have had to assume He called the cold raise with middle pair. Huh? That was pretty good. With a big king kicker like that was going to help him. All right, I get the scenario. I was about 30% correct and about 60% wrong, but in reality, I was probably 80% correct and 20% wrong, because I would have assumed there would have been a full house. But nonetheless, interesting hand.
Yep. Brad, you did not win the hand, but we appreciate you sending it in, and we'll send you a set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhand.com.
And if you get his name and address, I'll send him a set of my books as well.
Wow.
And I wasn't ragging on you, Brad. I just was trying to let you know that pocket pairs put more people on the rail than anything else in tournament poker. And if you analyze after the flop where the aces are, you really had eighth or ninth nuts. You just simply have one pair. Not the Van Good. I mean, I'd love to have him every hand. I know how to play him, but getting away from him is really the most important thing you can ever do with pocket aces, because they're going to win you, as Doyle says in his book, small pots and lose you a lot of big pots. And unfortunately, this one cost you a little bit too much money. And forgive me for being kind of a wise guy, but that's my nature anyway. And hopefully you'll be tuning in and calling into Poker Wars Live, and look forward to hearing from you.
Well,
hey, fellas, thanks for having me on. I enjoyed this immensely. Thank you again. I can't tell you. Anytime you're in the broadcast business or the magazine business, I guess you always want to expand your listening base and your readership. And I tip my hat to you guys. You picked the toughest business in the worst time to try in economic history, I would think, of this country. Other than the Great Depression, I don't know how you guys go out, quit real jobs and open a magazine. I mean, how the hell do you do that? That's kind of
stupidity.
Crazy.
Yes, yes, we overplay King 10 often. Well, Antonio, we thank you very much. We appreciate it. Folks, tune in, pokerwards.info. That's pokerwards.info, and listen to Antonio every Monday. Order his free books. And take care, Antonio. We'll talk to you soon.
I'll be talking to you Monday night. Thanks, fellas. Excellent. Enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Take care.
All right, Scott, another great show.
Antonio always has some good stories there. And look at that. Brad, aces cracked, wins a set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards and three books.
Man. I got to start sending in some hands. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.